All right, once again, back at you. The Action Podcast, episode 4. Finally doing it back-to-back weeks. 1 and 2 went pretty well. Now we got 3 and 4 back-to-back. Getting to a slow part of the year, I guess, right? Football's over. It almost seems boring to watch college basketball and, NBA.
Basketball is not boring, my friend. It's not boring.
No, don't get me wrong. 3 great games on today, on Saturday. Just not as impactful, or on Sunday. Just not as impactful to me as watching football on Saturday and Sunday and Thursday and Monday and practicing every day, you know. But yes, there is still sports going on. The world does still go on. It just doesn't revolve around football right now. So definitely got some different topics for you this week. We're going to be talking a little bit about the Manziel interview on Club Shay Shay. It was great. If you haven't watched that, it's an amazing interview by Manziel. A little bit about Rick Pitino and the situation that he got himself in a few days ago. Some tips on things that we would push for if we were trying to be athletic directors, if we were applying for athletic directors. And then also, what do we do when we're not coaching? What do we do when we're not busy all the time? You know, I know Coach Salazar is just entering his off season, just wrapping off the UIL basketball playoffs. And I'm in the full thick of track, but, you know, nobody does Saturday meets anymore. So I got some Saturdays to myself. And, of course, we're fortunate enough to work at a 4-day work week school, which is, I mean, it's pretty awesome to be off on Friday. So we find ourselves with a little bit of time. So we'll be discussing that on this episode of the Action Podcast.
Let's go.
All right, so a few days ago, Rick Pitino found himself in a little bit of hot water for some post-game comments that he had made. The team had been struggling, and I believe that they had gone 2-for-8 in their last 10 games, and they did pull off the win today by like 20 points. So obviously the kids responded, but he made some pretty harsh comments about the athletes, his mindset as far as coaching. He said it was the most miserable time he had ever had as a coach.
Most unenjoyable.
And the wins and losses didn't even matter. It was just the fact that, like, he just did not like his athletes and the way they were performing. He called them unathletic, said they couldn't move laterally, said they're great kids, but they don't. They hear, but they don't listen. He couldn't get them to do a bounce pass, basic basketball. I mean, he berated his team for a while, and he came back and apologized. And I think he talked to his team, and obviously they responded. But the thing is, first, is it professional to go out in front of the cameras? That's not something that we necessarily deal with at our level. But is it professional to talk about your kids in that way? The response was everybody was appalled. And how could you talk about your team if you don't want to coach anymore? Don't coach. But, you know, or do you want to be at? I think even the reporter asked him, do you want to be at St. John's? Like, you know, he's like, no, it's not the university's fault. It's my athletes. They're just not any good. And it tends to, you know, one of the topics that we've talked about the last few weeks is coaching the modern athlete. You know, how do you get the most out of them without getting them to check out, without getting them to transfer for him is transferring in the portal. I mean, they can get in the portal the next day.
Well, it's a really tricky situation. I mean, first off, when we evaluate what he said, you know, if you've been an athlete, you understand there is going to be a highly critical circumstance that you will face from your teammates, you know, from your coaching staff, from the head man himself, you know. And you and I have been athletics, you know, for a long, long time, and we've played sports, man, and we know that we've gone through some tough-minded individuals that were head coaches of our teams. They led our teams, you know, and it's not uncommon to have that type of call out. Now, as we've progressed to modern day athletics, I think you will start seeing it being phased out from where we're coaching at the high school level, at the middle school level, in youth sports. Though I do see some interactions at times be tough-minded interactions, but it's not going to be as common. Now, here's the thing about what we just witnessed. We're talking about grown men. Right. You know, we're talking about NCAA level athletes that aspire to be probably in the NBA, maybe playing overseas, and they have an all-time winner with Rick Pitino calling them out. And it is a little uncomfortable when you hear the sound bites. If you haven't heard the sound bites, definitely YouTube them, Google them, however you want to gain access to them. But it is a tough listen to, but it's not something that's uncommon. I think what was surprising to us that actually was revealed through the media.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was the post-game press conference. So, I mean, he let it out there for everybody to know. Apparently, famously, he had told Tony Delk at halftime to transfer from UK because he didn't belong there and was never going to play and was never going to be a successful basketball player. He turned out to be a pretty decent NBA player.
Absolutely.
So it's not something that's uncommon for him is to call out his players and question their manhood, I guess, per se. I didn't play college football or college sports. I know you played college sports. And my understanding is that it's not uncommon to get MF'd up and down the field or up and down the court.
Absolutely.
As they try to motivate you to do better, you know? But with the modern athlete, I'm not sure that works because of how easily kids can transfer, you know, and kids are young. When they're that young, under 25, they're looking for the path of least resistance, you know? And sometimes they're not necessarily looking for the guy that's going to be hard on them, you know? And I think that's kind of where Pitino is at. It's where Nick Saban was at, you know? The modern game and the way that the athletes respond to intrinsic motivation, I guess you should say, is not the same as it has been before. Is it part of toughness? Is it part of getting your point across? Yes. There's a fine line between being disrespectful and, you know, at least the way we deal with our, because they are kids, you know, and they do have parents and we do have administration. I mean, that's not something that we would do to point our kids out. But every once in a while, you have to tell a kid, hey, man, you're just not doing what you have to do. You know, you should be better. You should be stepping it up. You're not doing what we've asked you. You know, sometimes you got to have those tough conversations, and sometimes the kids respond and sometimes they don't, you know.
Well, I'm going to attack it twofold. You know, a lot of what you said is absolutely necessary, right? Like, when we need to hear the truth. At the end of the day, it's a bottom line type of environment, right? Either you're producing or you're not. And so in the case of Pitino and the St. John's basketball team, they're not producing to the level that Rick Pitino wants, you know, but it's not uncommon for us to have tough conversations. You know, at the end of the day, now more than ever, when we have our modern day athlete being told left and right, whether it's by parents, you know, whether it's by, you know, grandparents, their friends, like their ego is being stroked. And now, you know, they're coming into their locker room environment and the practice environment. And if you have somebody telling you constantly, you're the man, you're this, you're the woman, you're this, you know, and you're not producing as a coach, like, we cannot afford to add to that era of ways, right? We have to check it and call a spade a spade, you know? So I think that those tough conversations need to be had, right? I want to say, you know, earlier in the year, I had a parent, you know, communicate with me saying, you know, where her son was at, you know, and a lot of the parents were like, well, how do I know where my son is at as far as the standing on their football team, right, whether they're progressing or not? Because some of them actually have the means to afford extra, you know, coaching, whether it's through private instruction or whatever the case. So I think it's within our right and scope of responsibility to make sure that our athletes understand where they're at. You right, know, it's important right. for them to know where they're at and what they need to get better at. And sometimes they're tough conversations. Let's not get it twisted now. You know, we are men and we have a way of we communicate. And sometimes, you know, insults are the intimacy of language that we speak. Right. And so sometimes to get a point across, we'll say something funny like, hey, this and that, like, you know, hands like frying pans type of stuff, right? Like, just mm-hmm. to, and as a joke, right? Just to, you know, obviously smooth over what a message that's being delivered, right? And so, but at the end, make no mistake, that message needs to be delivered.
Oh, it needs to be delivered, definitely. But it seems now more than ever, though, then you start crossing that line into bullying and, you know, all those kind of things is, you know, why are you signaling my son out for something, you know, that kind of thing. It's a real fine line, you know, and it's sometimes, you know, like I said, this generation, like you said, though, you brought that great point about parents not knowing where their kids are at or what they can do to improve, you know, kind of thing. Because, you know, my son comes home, he's going to be a freshman next year, he's eighth grader. How was your day? Good.
Yeah.
What did y'all do in athletics? Nothing.
They're not very transparent.
No, I mean, you don't get much out of them. You know what I mean? Well, how was your practice? Oh, it was okay. You know, like, well, you know, we don't get a lot of information from them, and then not knowing where they are. And that's someone coming from someone who knows the game, right? But so if you're a parent that doesn't or doesn't understand, and you think they're doing good, or, you know, your kid is coming and telling you that he's the greatest and that he's not getting a fair shot, well, you're probably going to go ask, hey, well, he says he's not, why isn't he playing as much? He says he's doing, you know, never misses practice, or, you know, whatever the case might be. But, you know, it's definitely an interesting time that we live in where, you know, I think 5-10 years ago, I mean, that's probably not even a big deal that Patino goes on TV and says those things. But now it seems like it's a big deal because of the way society is, you know, because we're you know.
It's different, man. It's different.
It is. Yeah.
I'll tell you that I'm a tough person to play for. Like, I'm hard on my kids. I go at it with them, you know, and I try to, you know, it's just like sharpening the axe for me, right? You can't cut through wood with a dull axe. For me, I'm sharpening the axe in the way I approach things, but I'm very respectful, right? I hug on them after, you know, I'm tough on them. But at the end of the day, it's a very needed thing. You talked about bullying, man. You know, there's something to be said about an opponent that's the dude that's a real deal, and then talking mess. Like, that's a next level type of bullying that somebody psychologically may not be able to recover from. So we got to prepare our athletes to, you know, encounter an opponent that's next level Kevin Garnett in your face type of stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, they got to be, mental toughness is definitely something that is lacking in today's athletes, you know, I think in society in general with the youth, because, it, you know, life isn't easy, you know.
It's not.
You know, I mean, you're probably not going to have a boss that's going to, you know, but they could go to a meeting if you're at your boss and say, hey, we're not producing, you know, our numbers are not very good. If we don't do a better job, you're going to lose, you know, you're going to lose your job, which is a whole different thing than, you know, hey, we're not going to win the conference, or we're not going to make the NCAA tournament, you know, and that's where it needs to correlate, right? That's where it needs to, you know, where it's beyond the game, right? We're trying to build leaders and men that are tough, you know, in life, you know, because, you know, like Sylvester Stallone said, right? Life's going to punch you in the face, and it's not about how hard you can get hit. It's about how many times you can get hit and get back up, you know? And to me, I think those athletes responded. I mean, I watched the game today when St. John's was playing. The kids are attentive. I mean, there's nobody that seemed to have checked out. They elevated their game to me, and it worked for those kids. But it doesn't work for all of them. And
the response is accordingly, because at the end of the day, like, our athletes, I think every coach can say this, like, we're molding them to be the best versions of themselves, even at the time of adversity.
Right.
You know, and we're going to check them, right? And really, I'd rather have somebody check me than be passive aggressive about it,
right,
or be ignored, you know, because the old saying is, if once that coach starts ignoring you, then be fearful of where your status is on the
team.
That's
when you should be worried. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's when you should
exactly
be worried.
Exactly.
Yeah. No,
now, I do. I'm sorry, coach. I do want to now frame this in a different way now. Right now, when we talk about Rick Pitino, right, and we talk about anybody that has a status like them, right? I do want to talk about and bring to the attention the level of cachet they bring, right? The level
skins on the wall.
Well, let's just be real with it. Like, some of these guys are drunk with power, you know, and so they themselves have never really been checked, you know, or it's been a long time that they've been checked. And so I'm okay with actually having this discussion about whether it's right or wrong at the amateur level that we work at. You know, but when we're talking about the NCAA, it's no longer amateur. We're talking about the NFL. It's no longer amateur. So you're having a grown man addressing another grown man. Now, this time, it's not face to face. Now, this time, it's brought up in the media. You know, how do you think a player that may have a different mindset? And I mentioned to you in a private discussion, right? Like, I'm a person that grew up in the inner city. You know what I'm saying? The level of disrespect I won't tolerate, you know, and that's just the way it is for me. Like, I won't, you know, I'm not going to be unprofessional to the extent that we're going to come to fisticuffs, but you are going to be addressed about how you treat me as a professional. And when we talk about, like, you know, that environment, you know, and he crosses the wrong lines or the wrong path, you know, with somebody with my type of mindset, you know, and they respond negatively, they come back in the media and address his antics. Like, you know, now you're talking about a catch-22 situation. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, like I said, there's definitely that fine line, but I think it comes down to the relationship that you have with your athletes, or in, you know, certain situations, which I think we've all been a part of at some point in our career with our peers, right? And even you know, head coaches and whatever else, you know, sometimes it does get heated. Emotions are high. The stakes are high sometimes. And, but it's also the relationship that you have with that person, right? A kid can take quite a bit of it if they know that you care, if they know that you're coming from the right place. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
You can take a little bit of berating from your higher ups. If you screw up and they're putting you in check and you're like, yeah, I screwed that up, I'm going to get it right. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Based upon the relationship that you have. I think that's a big key component, is a relationship, right? If you don't have that relationship, if you don't establish a relationship, then it's not the same. Does that make sense?
Right.
I have seen people that have come into maybe a place where I'm at that's got a bit of rougher style. And it's the first day of two-a-days and they're ripping kids, you know, and they barely met them a week before, you know, and you're like, hey, man, build a little bit of a relationship first and then start to get there. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. And it's also just your style, I guess, you know.
It's okay to be tough. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was coached by Don Gadden, who is as tough as they come, you know, and I actually worked for him as well. And so it's okay to be tough. You know, it's when I want to be cautious when I say this, like, I think there's bad apples in a lot of professions. And especially if you hold that power over people, you know, I want to say, like, an analogy of a police officer, you know, that expects a level of obedience, you know, in a traffic stop. Right. And I get that part, but then there's crossing the lines, right? When we're drunk with power and you feel like you're above the law, like in some circumstances, I've actually witnessed coaches feel like they're above the law.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so I feel like that's also a level of this that needs to be brought to discussion, that, you know, I would probably venture to say that Rick Pitino feels a little bit untouchable as well.
Oh yeah, at this point, definitely. And even I think at his point in his career too, if, you know, if St. John were to come back tomorrow and be like, hey, you know what, we don't want you to be the coach anymore because you talk bad about your athletes, he would be like, okay, that's fine. And then he'd go find the next job. It's not a big deal. Or he retires. I mean, you know, I do see the point that you're making about the power drunk kind of things and where they feel untouchable. And I, you know, like Rick Pitino, probably Nick Saban,
But here's the thing about Nick Saban, right? Like, you say that, and I probably agree with you, right? Like, I would say that he has absolute power, but like the level of stories that came about him is more about reverence than it is about, you know, like, man, this guy was like, he was tough and I just hated him. Like, that's it. Right. Like, I think a lot of the players really speak highly of him because I think he actually really cared about his guys. Right.
And
like,
that's my point, is that it's about the relationship. You know, if you have a relationship with a kid or a peer or whoever, and you, like I said, like the time that you worry is when they do stop being hard on you, because then all of a sudden they're not counting on you. They don't care whether you bring it or not. Does that make sense? I mean, you know, and I think that's what it all comes down to, is having that relationship with a kid where you are able to get after them and rip them and then love them and then, you know, get them to do right. You know, and my philosophy is the first two or three times I'm going to teach you up and I'm going to coach you up and let's try to fix it. But the fourth or fifth time you screw it up, now I'm going to be angry, because I've showed you how to do it. I've helped you do it. We've done it together. At some point, you got to fix it. And if you're not fixing it, then I'm going to get a little bit upset with you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But at the same time, with my style, I think that sometimes the kids understand that once it gets to that point, okay, I've really messed up. Does that make sense? Okay, I need to fix this. But it's not to the point of, you know, I mean. And I don't think what Patino said was really that bad. I mean, in all honesty.
I don't think so either. I just think the forum, how he said it, right? I think that's more of a locker room discussion. Like, make no mistake. I don't think he's a Bob Knight guy.
No.
You know what I'm saying? That we're far removed from that. But, I say far removed from that, but it's not too long ago that we did have Bob Knight being celebrated. But some of his antics definitely wouldn't fit in today's
no.
era.
No, not at all.
You know what I'm
all.
Saying? Like, even though he's an excellent coach, like, at the end of the day, like, I mean, there's the level of disrespect and some of the things that I saw, like, that we all witnessed on video, firsthand knowledge from different players and such. Like, we're kind of removed from that. Obviously, I don't think Rick Pitino fits that mold. But, you know, he is suffering from the crime of announcing this to the world rather than keeping it in-house. And we're only talking about it because of that reason.
Oh, yeah. And he did get some flack. And he apologized apparently to the team in a team meeting, and, you know, said just that his expectations weren't being met and that he, you know, felt that they could do better. And it seemed to have rallied the team. Like I said, they bounced back, and they seem to have been they look pretty decent today. It's just, again, everybody has their style. Everybody has their way of motivating their athletes. And I think it still has a place in today's society. It's just
it takes a village.
It's becoming few and far between.
Well, definitely, you know, for your young coaches, be yourself. You know, at the end of the day, like, you have to be your authentic self to get your message across, because kids will see through that, you know. But we definitely some tough-minded coaches that are in the room that really bring balance to the equation, right? Like, they're a part of the recipe. You know, make no mistake, you know, though I disagree with how the message was delivered, you know, I do agree with some of the message. Like, at the end of the day, it's bottom line. You got to produce, and they're not producing. And you just mentioned today, Coach Alvey, like, they had a 20-point victory. So hopefully the trend continues where they're turning it around for themselves.
All right. So today, Coach Salazar put me on to Club Shay Shay. I don't know if y'all are familiar with Shannon Sharp's podcast, and not Sterling Sharp, Shannon Sharp. And I almost got that confused, but
they were both dudes.
yeah they were. And great, he's got some great people on his podcast. He's very informative. And of course, the whole Cat Williams thing a few weeks ago or whatever it was that blew up the internet. And Coach Salazar put me on today. Johnny Manziel was on there today, and or this week on Club Shay Shay. If you get a chance to go watch that on his podcast on wherever you find your podcast, it's a great interview. Manziel just speaks so well, man. I mean, he, you know, what a shame that he wasn't able to get it together, you know. Really eye-opening. Speaks a lot to where he is now as a man, I guess. And he knows that he screwed up a lot of things, and that he screwed up his chances. He apologized to Drake and to LeBron for believing in him. And then, you know, it very, very eye opening, a lot like the documentary that's on Netflix. If you ever, if you haven't seen that, the Johnny Manziel Netflix special is.
Coach, I honestly believe it's more riveting than the documentary.
It does go deeper. Yeah.
It's awesome,
Shannon Sharpe asks great questions, Coach. I mean, he really does like get to the bottom of it, you know.
Well, probably, you know, some of the brown that they're drinking too.
Yeah, that brother sipping on that expensive whiskey there, bourbon or whatever. Yeah.
I think it allows for that little bit more comfort level, but you know, first off, you know, shout out to Club Shay Shay, Shannon Sharpe. You know, he's doing an awesome job. You know, honestly, branching out from, you know, Skip Bayless and finding his way. And you know, he's landed two of the biggest interviews in 2024. You know, first off with Cat Williams and now with Johnny Manziel. And first of all, we know Johnny Manziel from like proximity.
Yeah.
Man, did this guy put up video game numbers. Right around the time that I first started coaching, you know, that was around the time that I first started coaching. I think he graduated from Tyvee in 2011. You know, I started coaching in 2007. And so I was able to see the level of fame that he had as a senior quarterback for Kerrville Tyvee. You know, the game that he had against Steele, Malcolm Brown led Steele, you know, and the game that he had against Aaron Green and Madison. Those were highly, you know, rated televised games as a high schooler, and he was putting up video game numbers. So the allure that he brought was always there for me. Probably for you, Coach, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, I
mean, and there's a reason why he's called Johnny Football. He's a legend, man. Around this area, he's a legend. And a lot of people in the nation probably equate him as a failure, but man, when he was on his roller coaster ride, the peaks of his roller coaster was as good as it gets.
Oh no, absolutely. And in the interview, it was almost a highlight of Texas football. I mean, the way he praised Texas football, you know, how he said that, you know, he gave his top five quarterbacks of all time from the state of Texas, put Kyler Murray at number one. You know, he said that was the best football player he had ever seen. Helped recruit him to A&M, and then it kind of fell apart there at A&M with Sumlin and Spavital and Kingsbury and those guys. But it was eye-opening because it kind of took the layers off, I thought, where he talked about that he wasn't, you know, he was raised right. You know, they would go to church on Sunday, you know, that he was not raised to be like the way that he acted, you know. And he owned up to it, you know. I'm sure he's in counseling, and I know that he had been in rehab before. So I'm sure those things had opened up for him, and he understands now how he has a part in what happened to him. But it was eye opening how, you know, that he was provided with everything that he needed to be successful in life, and just kind of just let it get, you know, just get through his hands, you know. And now that he understands that he had a big part in that happening, I thought that was very powerful of him to say, you know, giving credit to his mom and his dad, you know.
I'm so thankful that he was able to figure that out, you know, because it was a potential death spiral, you know, of where he was headed, you know. Even glancing at the pictures of when he went and had his binge in Vegas, right, to where he first got drafted from the Browns, where he was weighing 210 pounds, to when he was at Vegas, missing game 16, if I'm not mistaken, that year.
Yeah.
The year escapes me, but he was 170 pounds.
And then he missed his flight, I think, right? And then at the combine, he went out at the combine the night before. And, you know, got high or whatever, and you know, somehow didn't test positive, and, you know, but, you know, his agent dropped him. I mean, you know, his best friend from college that helped kind of make the money train, they don't speak anymore. I mean, it's just, you know, but, you know, more than anything, you know, one of the most powerful points he made was when they asked him, if you were in college now, what do you think your NIL worth would be? And, you know, I think Shea was like, you know, $5 million, and he was like $10 million. He's like, $5 million just to get me on the campus, you know, and then a $5 million for all the other stuff that I could make money for, you know.
And that's that Aggie money.
Yeah.
That's that Aggie money right there.
Yeah. And Shannon Sharp straight out asked him, how, you know, what would have happened as a freshman in college if you had, you know, $5 million? And he was like, oh, it would have been a debauchery. Like, it would have been a complete, you know, shit show, you know. And that lends to what a lot of these athletes now are going, you know, they're getting this money so early, you know. He said that they would get like a $700 amount a month allowance or whatever. And he was like, most of these guys were sending that money back home, you know. They're supporting their families. He talked about, I thought it was also kind of, I mean, led to how much people liked him in the locker room, I guess. You know, you've never really heard anything bad about him being a locker room presence. It was more just his ways outside of the building, off the field, you know. But where he bought diapers and stuff for Mike Evans's daughter, I think, when he was little, when his friends needed book money or whatever. I mean, or, you know, if they couldn't pay their tab at the bar, that he'd show up and pay their tabs. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, he was rolling in the dough. He was NIL before NIL. I mean, if we were being realistic.
For sure.
You know.
For sure. I agree with him. You know, $10 million sounds about right. If you're talking about one of the things he disclosed when his dad met with Kevin Sumlin and asked for $3 million just to stay for two more years, that was at that time. You know, that's not accounting for inflation or where we're at today.
He still got to keep his Heisman.
Like, it's remarkable. It's a remarkable interview because of how candid he is of sharing the demons that he's gone through and he's overcoming. He's still overcoming them. You know, it's not like he's, being celebrated for being, you know, on the other side of things. I think that some of the demons that he brought to the table are still weighing on him is something that he's going to have to work through his whole life. You know, he talked about his mental struggles. He talked about, you know, his confidence issues that were zapped away, you know, towards the end of his career. I just, you know, what's fascinating about him is that he was able to share, you know, how effortless the game came to him. You know, I mentioned how amazing his high school career was, but this man literally led in his freshman year the Texas A&M Aggies. I think they were 15-point underdogs at Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama at Tuscaloosa, right? And that's one of the greatest things that anybody has ever witnessed in that sport, you know. And it was just jaw-dropping his performances that he would put up. And I think what was pivotal for him in the negative sense is when the Johnny football, you know, persona really took over after that Cotton Bowl victory over Oklahoma. And I think that was his sophomore year. And that was just kind of like the point of no return for just the ego that really took over Johnny Manziel and transcended into Johnny football.
And it was also he spoke a lot about how his relationship with Cliff Kingsbury, you know. And that Kingsbury tried to get, you know, went in there and tried to renegotiate his contract. And, you know, Mike Sumlin was like, yeah, nah, you can just go ahead and make your money somewhere else. And that how that affected his relationship with Mike Sumlin. And then also whether he was going to stay or not, you know. But the two of them together, I mean, you know, I think in the documentary, he talks about where Kingsbury went to go pick him up, I think. Because he was passed out drunk the night before, was hung over, threw him in the shower, you know, gave him some coffee, you know, hey, let's go. And then he played the game like at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever and lit up the scoreboard, you know, which is just crazy to think about at that level, you know, that he was able to do those things, you know.
Because the things that he volunteered, for sure, he was getting drunk on Tuesday. For sure, he was getting drunk on Thursday. Tuesday with the baseball guys and Thursday with the dogs on his team. You know, that's what he admitted to. That was a for sure. Mm-hmm. We don't know about the other times, you know, that transpired throughout the week, right? But he was lighting up the scoreboard, and it was very, very entertaining. He was one of the most entertaining football players I've ever seen, you know. And personally speaking, between Johnny Manziel and Vince Young, and what I witnessed from those two guys in college football, some of the most entertaining football I've ever seen in my life.
Well, he said that's what inspired him to play football, was watching Vince Young win the Rose Bowl. He had always been a baseball guy before that. And then after that, and that Christmas, he got a Vince Young jersey with the Rose Bowl patch on it. And from that point on, you know, he decided he wanted to be a football player. But he said that he had played baseball since he was really young. And by the time he got to high school, he was really burnt out on it, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting, because when you have that level of talent, you know, I'm sure he was a great baseball player. You know, sometimes, you know, the youth sports thing is such a conundrum, because you do want the kids to get exposure to sports. You do want them to compete and have fun, you know, but sometimes these youth sport leagues are just so serious, you know, and sometimes, you know, the select thing and how much money it costs and the time, you know, if a kid is getting burnt out by the time he's in high school, that's not good for anybody, you know. Luckily, he was able to find football, and it was his path to at least getting to college. But, you know, who knows? I mean, he could have been a great baseball player, and maybe that the football stuff and the whole Johnny Manziel stuff never happens, you know.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind he would have been excellent at baseball.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of spot on with questioning, like, what youth sports bring to the table. You know, I think, you know, I don't want to speak for you, but I'm going to say that I've witnessed kids that I've coached in football that already been burnt out by their sophomore year, you know, because they've played so many years of football. And I understand the culture of it. I used to coach for the Junior Vokes, the NAJIV affiliated Junior Vokes in San Antonio. It's a lot of pressure from 5 years old all the way up.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of things that come, you know, that reveal itself. You know, the one thing is the physical aspect, right? But the mental aspect and the toll that we're asking our kids to, you know, put on themselves, you know. And then I always wondered, like, you know, our practices were like from 6 to 8. When do the kids do their homework? You know, yeah, like I was wondering, that's like true. That's another thing. Like,
yeah.
Are they even working on becoming better students? Like, you know, I love sports. I love what it brings to the table. But you and I know that the key to life is having that education, right, and having the knowledge, you know, to stay ahead of the curve. And so, I honestly thought that was a major component that was something that we, you know, considered, you know, as far as education goes.
Yeah, no, I thought it was revealing that he, you know, he was burnt out by his sophomore year in high school. He, you know, in his as great a player as he was, he didn't have a lot of confidence. I mean, it seemed like, you know, he talked about how he didn't want to go to, ended up decommitting to Oregon because Marcus Mariota was there, and he didn't think that he was as good as Marcus Mariota, and so he was never going to get to play there, and that's why he ended up switching his commitments and stuff. UT wanted him to be a safety. They didn't want him to play quarterback. And, you know, and he was like, I don't know. I don't want to play safety. Like, they, you know what he said? There's no white safeties in the NFL, I think was what he said. you know, but it's just an amazing story. A Texas football story is really what it is. Legendary, you know, regardless of what he didn't achieve in the NFL. What he did at the college level, I mean, is, you know, I mean, he's in the A&M Hall of Fame. I mean, he's on the campus all the time, I think, kind of as an ambassador, you know, and I mean, it's just an incredible story of a kid from, you know, he was originally from Tyler, Texas. His parents moved to Kerrville and just took the nation by storm. I mean, courtside seats at the Houston game, I mean, you know, he said the access that he was given, you know, were, you know, James Harden and LeBron and Drake and, you know, they're all becoming his friends on Instagram. And, you know, so he would shoot out a DM like, hey, can I get some courtside seats for tonight? And James Harden was like, yeah, I got 3 at the box for you. Well, yeah, it's an hour and a half from, what do you say, an hour and a half from College Station. Three of his boys drive to Houston and they're sitting courtside. I mean, and it's incredible how they developed this whole story to protect the money, you know? And it's like he said, he's like, I was like a 20-year-old kid. I wasn't thinking about it. Like it was just, you know, hey, I'm walking by and they're selling out jerseys at the bookstore and I'm not getting any money, you know, and, you know, then they create the story of how his grandfather was, like, came from oil money or whatever that turned out to be completely not true. But people believed it. And that's why he was sitting courtside at the NBA finals or, you know, at the Super Bowl in a box with, you know, celebrities. I mean, it's just insane how it just like unraveled, you know. And you know, it's like what he said, that somebody had offered him like a couple $100 or something to sign some autographs. And then another guy was like, you're going to take that? And he was like, yeah, you know, and he's like, well, dude, you could be making $300,000. And they just started, I mean, they started an enterprise. I mean, NIL before NIL, right? Now,
right.
You know, people do it all the time. I think, you know, he talked a lot about how Reggie Bush deserves his Heisman back, right?
Yeah, you know, he lent, I think when we think about the movie Blue Chips.
Yes.
That's
yes.
What I was thinking about, everything that he's talked
the
about.
Money the Money Men. Yeah.
Old way of doing things.
Yeah.
You know, in that movie, this character named Happy is the bag man. You know, is the person that's providing money to Shaq, Penny, you know, Ricky Rose character with the,
yeah.
With the,
and he with talked the, about that. LSU had a bag man, A&M, you know, he named all the schools that you know, were trying to get him to go there. And now they all had bag men. I mean, it's. Yeah.
And so, you know. I think a lot of, there's a lot of people scared about what he knows. And if he's going to be operating as candid as he is, man, he's going to be a wealth of stories at you know, to come. Now, I will say this, side note. The level of drama that him and Manti Te'o, who were in that same Heisman class, provided. Man. Their stories, man, you know, and how everything unfolded for them, right, is absolutely crazy. That might be the most entertaining Heisman ceremony ever, just because of those two headliners right there, man. But that was just a side observation that I had. I mean, he talked a little bit about Manti in his interview with at Club Shay Shay, and how much of a great guy Manti was, and his family.
Yeah, he talked
his
about
family
his family
was to his parents, yeah. You know, and so yeah, man, it's just a, you know, the whole aura of Johnny Manziel was awesome, man. It was very, very fascinating.
Yeah, he's still entertaining. Like, you know what I mean? If he was on College Game Day, like, I would watch it. You know, it's like Charles Barkley and Shaq going at each other, you know, on NBA Live or whatever, you know? Like, it's just, like, just the stories that he had. And he's obviously an intelligent guy. I mean, you know, and he, you know, the way he speaks, he's very eloquent. And it was almost a 2.5-hour interview, too.
Right.
You know, where he pretty much laid it all on the table. And I think that's credit to also to Shannon Sharp, like just the questions that he was asking, you know, like, you know, how did you grow up? Like, you know, and he's like, I know why you're asking that. He's like, no, like my parents raised me right. You know, or, you know, the questions about, how did you end up on court side at the NBA finals, you know, like when you didn't have any money or, you know, driving a Mercedes Benz in college. I mean, it was so obvious too, you know, that he was getting paid, that, you know, the NCAA, what they suspended him 2 games or something. And, you know, and for Reggie Bush, which essentially was doing the same thing.
Well, I don't know if it was the same thing. You know, I know what was proven does not equate to what was going on. You know,
it's not even close
with Johnny Manziel.
Yeah.
Not even close. But at the end of the day, you know, breaking the rules is breaking the rules. I just, you know, I feel bad for Reggie Bush, you know.
Do you think he deserves to get his Heisman back at this point now that,
yeah. I do. He's probably the most, you know, I showed a lot of reverence to Vince Young and to Johnny Manziel. But Reggie Bush is that guy that was appointment television for me. When I was younger, man, that, you know, especially being a running back, like You know, I really love, enjoy the way he played, man. It was just his highlights. I can't remember, you know, how many times I uploaded those highlights on my phone, man, just to just get a glimpse of his running style, try to emulate as much as I could, man. His legendary finishes at the goal line, you know, leaping into the goal line, just how acrobatic he was, man. And not only that, man, but he was not a big guy, man. He's a smaller running back, you know, so being able to utilize his hands as a receiver, like all of that stuff is something that I know that you and I are offensive coordinator aspire, you know, type of people, man. So, you know, imagine if we had a weapon like that, like nuts, like we would go nuts over that.
Yeah, no, I think definitely. And he talked about how he's one of the biggest proponents to him getting his Heisman back. And he's like, I've been in the meetings and I've been there, and it's like people were discussing it, but you know, it's up to the powers that be, whatever that meant, you know. But I thought it was a fascinating interview. If you get a chance, check it out on Club Shay Shay. Johnny Manziel interview was epic, epic interview. All right, so the next topic we're going to talk about here is you know, it's getting in the spring. There's jobs opening up, you know, across the state of Texas. Some surprisingly and some expected. And there's a lot of expiring athletic directors out there, a lot of expiring head coaches. It's a very different interview process than it is getting an assistant job or even a coordinator job, because it is an administrative position, typically some type of committee or, community members. It's just very different type of interview. So one of the things we're going to talk about is what would be your secret weapon? What is one thing that you think would separate you from the other candidates? Sometimes there's 16 candidates that get interviewed. Sometimes there's two candidates that get interviewed. Then typically there'll be a finalist list of three or four candidates that then get interviewed again. And then a finalist, of course, gets picked and then taken to the board. But what is your go-to secret weapon that would separate you from other candidates if you were interviewing for an athletic director job?
Coach Alvey, it goes without saying, but I'm gonna assume that everybody that's, you know, targeting a position like this knows ball, right? And you know, inside zone, whether you're a zone guy, gap scheme guy, whether you're a 3-4, 4-3 guy, you know, 3-5 or stack defense, whatever, like we all know ball, right? But as you mentioned, it's an administrative position and really has to transcend and, you know, really branch into the school that reaches beyond your student athletes. And so I have an idea that was presented to me by Steve Garcia, defensive coordinator, head baseball coach at Lanier High School. Is a guy that I grew up with, one of my best friends. But he mentioned a senior exit plan. Right. And so the picture that he painted was establishing a character development / career aspirations planning into your football programming. And the outcome is to allow for growth that prepares our young men to be a professional in something other than athletics. And I think honestly, it goes without saying, like most athletes want to be at the professional level, but at the end of the day, is that realistic? We're talking about the 1% of folks that really make it to that level. And even at that 1%, it's not even a guarantee to sustain that level. And so I want to bring some statistics. I use the TAPR report in the state of Texas, right? And what that provides is it gives you a glimpse of demographics, of your testing, your results, your accountability, all of that in a nutshell, right? And what this document I pulled up, it's based out of Lanier High School. This is a 2023 document, right? Lanier is where I graduated. So when I look at, it says the amount of Hispanics at Lanier High School is 1,472 students, right? And then I go down and it says economically disadvantaged, it says 1,494 students. So that's roughly, you know, from the entire population hovering between 95 and 96% in those two key points of demographic, right? Now, when I cut across, it also gives you what the state average is, right? The amount of Hispanic students in the state of Texas is at 53%. And adding to that, economically disadvantaged is at 62%. You know, in the state of Texas. So there is a crisis that needs to be remedied. A lot of times, like me, students that kind of fall into these two categories are going to be first generation college graduates, right? Many times somebody like me will have a parent that doesn't speak English or very limited English, right? So a lot of things can already be lost in translation, right? And so when we have a role like ours, as very influential as we are as coaches, right? Not just influential in athletics, on the entire campus, we're looked to in several different things to you know, spearhead initiatives. I think we're losing out on opportunities to grow wholeheartedly what our student athletes should become. You know, preparing them for the next level steps, right? So I sat down and had a conversation with Coach James out of Sotomayor High School, right? Excellent dude. I met him through a fellow coach named Coach Ortega, you know, for South Sand High School. And so he's an independent finance contractor, right? And so what he does is he educates folks on finances, right? And how that's supposed to look as, and what, you know, what some of the key things that most homes like myself and the way I grew up with are missing. And so it really, you talked about Rick Pitino early on, right? When, you know, addressing things head on, right? That's what it was for me. A lot of that type of education was missing in my household. Not because it wasn't a topic of conversation or prepared to talk about. Like, it just was stuff that we didn't know as a family. Stuff that first generation type of families, you know, do not know. And so when we have this level of influence, right, I really feel like we're missing our mark in the development of our student athletes if we don't have something like this established. We go on and talk about people that we know, you know, some of our student athletes, when we asked that question, we said it last week, you know, one of our athletes, what are we doing once we graduated? We're 4 months from there. I don't know, coach. I mean, I have some things. I have, you know, I have some ideas, but
Isn't even one of the lower, you know, lower level students. This is one of the high achieving students.
And one of the best teammates I've been around.
Yeah, doesn't have a plan. Yeah, no, I think that's a great point, is establishing something beyond the field, right? Beyond the game. Like you said, the vast majority of our athletes are not going to be pro players. They're not going to be college players. Some of them may not even be made for college. And I think that's one of the things is also, you know, is the lack of trades, you know, welding, the plumbing, the electrician, the, you know, and just having those kids have a plan. I think that's a great point. As far as when you go in there for that type of interview, is establishing that type of program where it's the past the game, right? It's more than just the game.
It's transformational.
Right. Because that's bringing people out of poverty. That's bringing people in, you know, first generation education. That's, you know, all those kind of things. And maybe the broader point is knowing where you're going and your demographics of the kids that you're going to be teaching or coaching or administrating at that point, and understanding their backgrounds and what it is that you can do to help, to be, beyond the game, right? Beyond just X's and O's. I've only been part of two interviews, but they weren't any X's and O questions. I mean, all the questions were administrative and how you would handle certain situations and budgeting and things like that. And I think that something like that, where you are having a program to establish kids starting from when they're probably in junior high, let them start a plan, you know, of career development. What is it that you're interested in? It might change from being an NBA player to, by the time they're a sophomore, they're, you know, looking at, you know, being a welder or a teacher or, you know, whatever the case might be. And then you, as part of your program, then establishing that pathway to get there, right? A lot of times parents don't know, they don't understand. I recently had a conversation with a former friend, and his kid is now in college, and she's at a junior college, and she's getting her associates. And just, you know, it was like, you know, can she teach with an associates? You know, I said, well, she really needs a bachelor's, you know, that kind of thing. And just having someone to talk to, you know, and he's like, you know what, I might have her call you, you know, and yeah, no, definitely give her a call. You know, I can try to guide her, you know, at least how I did it and how, you know, how you're able to do it. But a lot of people don't have that, you know, a lot of people don't have that. And as you, as an athletic director and establishing your culture, in making it past beyond the game, right? I think that's the whole goal of everything that we do, is to get people to be good citizens and mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and whatever else, as they grow older and become good, you know, contributing members of society. And if we can help establish that plan, because I think you're right when you say that what we do and the way we are with our athlete, because of the relationships that we had, that the positive impact that we can have in helping guide kids, you know, I've never really thought about it from that aspect of, you know, we have them for the 4 years they're in high school, they graduate, I hope they do good. A lot of times it's kind of the way I've always been, like, I hope they do good. I like to hear when my athletes do good, but what am I doing to make them be on that path? And I think that's a great point, you know, and one of the things that I've always said is that, you know, athletic programs are essentially leadership academies that get to play sports, you know. Mm-hmm. The sports is a big part, obviously, but it's what they learn playing those sports. It's what they learn about life. It's what they learn about, you know, camaraderie and teammates and, you know, being a contributing to something that's greater than you, you know. And it's a pretty powerful thing, you know, that you bring up about getting them on that pathway, establishing a plan for those kids, you know, and I think that's a really good, really good point.
Coach, it's much needed. I mean, I understand, like, we're limited in time, when we're allowed to spend with our kids, you know, when it comes to UIL regulations and such, but you know, I don't know how much, I'm not gonna venture and say like this it's gonna have this X amount of impact, you know, on a Friday night for our football team, you know, but it really it comes down to, it's not about that, right? We you talked about being a good citizen, and you talked about, you know, bringing value to your community when it's all said and done, you know. I'm gonna pull up, you know, something like, you know, so how does this fit, you know, for somebody like a Bernie Champion, you know, very affluent community. I had an opportunity to interview there last year with Coach Ellis. And, you know, I just brought their TAPR report up, right? Like, so if I looked at some of those same dynamics that I mentioned about Lanier High School, like, you know, as far as Hispanic goes, it's about 651 students, you know, which roughly is about 32% of their student population, right? But economically disadvantaged, there's 236 students, mm-hmm, in that building. You know, that's about 12% of their population. So even though it's an affluent community, right, there are still people that you can catch that are not going to fall through the cracks, right? And that's a big difference between Lanier High School and Bernie Champion, right? Like, you know, the needs of that type of programming, huge difference. It's evidence in the numbers that I gave you. But it's still a necessity, right? At the end of the day, we're ground zero for talent development in whatever profession these kids want to choose, right? And so if we're talking about truly being their coach and truly coaching up the entire athlete, like, this is something that I'm very adamant that I think it needs to be a requirement, right? It's requirement programming and stuff. It's stuff that we need to make, drive an importance to. Is it going to mean the difference of you being a state champion, you know, state champion contender or district champion contender? I'm not going to go out and say that. What I am going to tell you is that the kids, the student athletes that you're coaching, will value you a whole lot more than just that transactional experience if you just keep it straight athletics.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's kind of the point, right, is we want them to be, you know, past the game, you know, beyond the game. I've said that a few times. And I think regardless of what the percentage of of low income or Hispanic or whatever. I mean, there is no, you know, kids are confused and lost a lot of times as to what they're going to do with the rest of their lives. And thankfully some kids have the ability and the background that gets them in the right direction, but there's a plenty even in affluent homes where they don't really know what they're going to do yet, you know? And if we can be there as a guiding voice, as have them establish some sort of plan, you know, I think that it could be a really beautiful thing, you know, visiting campuses, explaining the FAFSA process, you know, how to apply for schools. I mean, all those kind of things. I mean, the counselors do a great job, but, you know, a lot of times that relationship with the counselor is not the same relationship you have with your coach. And I think that that could be a very impactful thing, a very powerful thing. I think that's a great, great point.
Well, to add to that, coach, like the counselor's role nowadays is not what it used to be.
All right.
You know, it's much more of a logistics position. And so the career development is really, you know, it's hinging on the CTE programming that's available at that school, you know, on the CTE teachers, you know. And honestly, like I brought up, you know, you made a great point, right? I brought up, you know, it's not a Hispanic thing, right? Like I just gave you what looks like me, right? Like my demographics. But when we just talked about Johnny Manziel, you know, he had a what for all intents and purposes, we thought he had a good storybook start to his life, right? Two parent home in a fluent community like Kerrville Tyvee. And he had a lot of his own struggles, yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't matter what background you come from, right? Sometimes you get lost, right? You need guidance and you need those beacons of hope that are coaches, that are counselors, that are teachers, that are parents in the community. Like that's another factor, right? Like sometimes, you know, we also have to look at, you know, the village in the community, right? A lot of times people want to mind their own business nowadays, right? Like, and they don't want to get caught up in the drama. But I'm here today because of the village of community members that helped raise my mom or help my mom raise me, I should say.
Yeah, no, definitely that mindset needs to come back into our communities, you know, the village, and what better place is the village athletic director or the village sports. I mean, it's huge in especially in small communities. It's the only thing going on Friday nights, you know, and if we can help do something to get these kids headed in the right direction or at least to have some sort of plan, I think it's a beautiful thing. And I've never thought about it as far as from the athletic aspect of taking on that role of the many roles that we carry as coaches. But I think that's a great point, coach, and you make a great point on that.
If you want to know what that looks like, folks, you know, shout out South Dayas at Lanier High School. They got a wonderful program that I just saw that they expanded it with UIW in a partnership. Phil Baron at South Sand High School, they have a Making Men format that they do. It's a leadership panel that goes all, you know, for all spring that culminates in an event. You know, it's a tie and suit event that, you know, allows a student athlete to bring their father figure into the fold. You know, that's a great representation of it as well. Leon McNeil and City Kids Adventures organization that operates basically out of San Antonio, but I know he lives in Divine. These are wonderful people that you can get in touch with to, you know, investigate what that looks like, right? Of course, you can shout me out, you know, at Coach Ivan on Twitter. You know, we can have more of a discussion on what that would look like.
So as we wrap up the episode 4 of the Action Podcast, we were kind of talking about on the break about what it is that we do on our off time. You know, as summer's around the corner, spring break is coming here in 2 weeks. You know, so for some of us, we're still working. If you're baseball, softball coaches, you know, we'll have a couple track practices in there, but we try to give the kids off some time in spring break. But as summer approaches and spring break, what is it, some of the things that's your go-to, coach, to unwind? I know you're now free in this full spring sports, probably for a long time. I don't know when was the last time you've had spring off, but basketball just ended. What are some of the things that you do to unwind and on your free time?
Well, coach, earlier today I had a chance to, you know, get on the grill a little bit and dabble. I'm not very good. Like my wife Leah says, like it's good. But I know for a fact I'm not as good as some of the some of the coaches I've been around. So I got to thinking, like, man, wouldn't it be great at some point that we can kind of put together the logistics of an event that can be a cook-off? Because I can tell you right now, right, South Ace at Lanier, Wendell Harris at San Antonio Lee, Jesse Marial at San Antonio Edison, right? I know that you can dabble a little bit on the grill. You know, Ilian Martinez, you know, he's made some brisket for us and several different things, you know, on Sundays that I know he can dabble. Like, there's got to be some type of competition amongst coaches, because I know these guys ain't scared of competition.
No,
like,
not at all.
We got to figure something out.
But yeah, no, I think that would be great, man. And there's actually a hashtag on X or whatever. It's like coaches who cook. It's like hashtag coaches who cook. You know, I love posting my videos of when I'm cooking. And I tell people all the time, you know, they're like, hey, man, that looked good. You know, you don't need to invite us. And I say, hey, man, anytime you see a video on there, that's an open invitation. Like, just come on, you know. But, yeah, that's I think that'd be a great idea, man.
We're gonna stay tuned, folks, because we're going to try to, you know, start this initiative, because I am super excited of the possibilities. And we'll figure out, you know, at the end of the day, those meals proceeds can go to something, some good cause or whatever. But there are too many coaches that I've ran across that are just, you know, excellent on the grill and excellent in the kitchen that need to showcase their talents. But to get back to on task, right, Coach, something that's near and dear to me is visiting Minnesota, you know, going back. And so if you're not aware, I went to Minnesota, you know, for 6 years, 6.5 years. I lived up there. I went to school at Minnesota State University, Moorhead, and Hibbing Community College, and met my wife up there. And so she has family that live, to be exact, in Sawyer, Minnesota, which is, you know, about 30 minutes outside of Duluth. Wonderful community. Love going up there to visit. If we go in spring break, it'll be probably snowmobile time for me.
Yeah, I was gonna say. It sounds cold,
man. But I love it. I love it, man. It's four seasons to enjoy up there in Minnesota. But the snowmobiling is one of my favorite things I've ever done in my life. You know, so I'm hopeful that if we can swing that, you know, let's see if the income tax return comes in on time. We can swing that trip, then we'll definitely do that. But for sure, it's on the agenda in the summer. If you haven't experienced summers up north, man, they're beautiful. They're beautiful to take in. Minnesota is a great location for that because it's a land of 10,000 lakes. So if you enjoy fishing, if you enjoy just being out in the cabins in the woods type of deal, four wheeling and all that stuff, man, that's something that I enjoy definitely doing. But, you know, I have little ones, you know, definitely taking in, you know, some instruction on basketball, you know, for my daughters, especially Aneli and Leilani. And then, my side business, my side venture, man, with Destination Athlete, you know, just trying to, you know, have a side hustle and, hopefully at some point that becomes my main hustle, that, you know, I can continue to grow. And, if you have any questions on that, you know, feel free to shout me out on that.
A plug right there. A plug.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, as far as I'm concerned, as far as I, you know, whenever I do get some time off, especially on the weekends, like you said, you hit the nail right on the coffin, is grill, you know. Whether it's brisket, pulled pork, I mean, just fajitas, hamburgers, whatever it is, I like to throw on the grill. I think it's a great time for family to get together, you know, and bond over the sharing bread, you know. And I think it's a great thing. But you're right. I mean, there, you know, there's a lot of great coaches out there that can grill, and I think it'd be great to get something together for coaches to have a cook off. For just bragging rights and more, like you said, for probably a great cause that we can donate to something, you know, that'd be a great thing that we definitely
somebody's
should set
getting
up.
A championship belt. For
yeah,
sure.
That would like, be
we're
great.
Gonna, we're
yeah,
we're gonna go all out for that.
Oh man, and you got coaches that love to compete anyway. Can you imagine over a brisket? Oh man, it would be great. That's definitely something we got to get going. The other thing I like to do is fish, man. I'm fortunate enough to have a boat, and I don't take it out as much as I should. Just because of how busy we are often, but whenever I can get out on the coast or on a lake, I mean, just throw some hooks in the water. I love doing it, man. It's a great pastime, listening to some music and some camaraderie and fishing. And my wife, usually at Christmas time around December, she'll book us a trip to Mexico, man. We love going to Playa del Carmen, and this year we're going to stay at Isla Mujeres, and she does a great job of setting that up, and it's something to look forward to as the year kind of winds down. One thing about once track season hits, it seems to be so fast and furious that before you blink, it's May, you know. But it's something to look forward to, and it's something that we like doing, is going down there. So you like going north to the cold. I like going south to the beach, you know what I'm saying? So, but you definitely got to find time, you know, as a coach, as busy as we are, is to spend time with family and get away and, you know, whatever it is that, that you like to do. You know, we were talking about the NCAA is fixing to come out, you know, there's a lot of coaches. I know, Coach Welsh at Natalia just talked his wife into letting him get an Xbox in anticipation of NCAA. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of fun be had once that comes out. You know, I started out with the original Atari 3600, if you even know what that is. But all the way to now, I'm, you know, playing some Madden on the there's nothing like two coaches going at it on Madden, man. So I like to show up the kids sometimes whenever I can too, you know, but you know, definitely got to find some time to do something, you know? Yeah.
I miss gaming, man. I used to be really? A big Madden person, especially
Call of Duty, squad up, baby.
2010 is when I really stopped playing. But since that, I definitely enjoyed, you know, a lot of versions of Call of Duty. I'm not, you know, awesome at it. You know, I can compete a little bit, but very, very entertaining. I could tell you that, if I get on Call of Duty and it's like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, I probably won't shut the game off.
It's about 4 o'clock in the morning.
3 in the morning, 4 in the morning. Like, then
you'll be in trouble, level, man.
My adrenaline level is really pumping, man. It's crazy how that game can get you hooked, man. So, but yeah, man, I definitely missed the gaming part for sure, man. I don't think I'm afforded that much time since I have little ones.
It's tough. Yeah, no. Thankfully, and I have
They could watch me play, but I don't want them to watch me play first person shooter games.
Yeah, well, thankfully I have a teenage boy, and so that way I can get away with saying that he wanted the game. You know, so that's happened a couple strategy. Times. Dad, I didn't want that game. Like, no, you do. You tell mom you wanted that game. So, but no, definitely, man. It's always important to find something else to do. You know, and kind of get away from a little break of the monotony and a little mindless activity, whatever it is. You know, whether it's fishing or, you know, planning a good vacation. And hopefully, you know, thankfully we're blessed to be able to have the opportunity to go to those places and things like that. But you always got to find some time for yourself and time to unwind. So just a little bit of what we do to get away from the grind a little bit. Mm-hmm. So this has been episode 4 of the Action Podcast. We're going pretty strong. We're still working on getting the guests. Hopefully next week we'll definitely get somebody. I know some of y'all are probably getting tired of just seeing our faces every week, and we kind of expand, you know, so definitely looking to having some guests on for sure next week and going into spring break. So another episode of the Action Podcast.
Let's go.